You're listening to the Women as in Art podcast, and I am your host, Leah Schrager.
Okay, welcome to Women as in Art. Today I have Kurt McVeigh with me. I am so excited to talk to you. Why don't you start by introducing yourself? Tell us a bit about your role in the art world.
Well, I wear many hats. Most people know me as a writer. I sort of get a kick out of how people introduce me. Sometimes I'm a critic, sometimes I'm this, sometimes I'm that. But I would say first and foremost, I'm a guy who writes about art and artists. I also engage with artists in many, many different capacities, from curation to sales to advising to being one myself. But yeah, primarily I interview artists along the full spectrum of super successful, by whatever metric of success works for you or others, maybe objectively, to people starting out. Yeah, I do like interviews usually, and simultaneously speak to the work or the exhibition or whatever. So it's like a little 1-2 punch: interview, profile meets review often.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are a true polymath. Is that the right
word? That'll work. That'll work.
Different things. And you have a very exciting Instagram to stay up on. I feel like that's a nice way, for people to kind of be a bit in touch with what's going on.
It is, but more exciting than yours, or it's not a competition. It's
not a I think it is for me. It's more exciting.
All right.
What is your Instagram? Let's just say it right here.
My Instagram is Wyankumbone, which is a little known historical figure who features prominently in a manuscript that I'm looking to get out into the world. And it became my handle a long time ago to remind me to stop scrolling or posting on social media and get back to writing. And now I'm done with this particular project. And now it's time for the world to know who Wyankumbone is. So, or at least as far as I was able to research who this little known person is.
That's exciting.
But yeah, Wyankumbone. You can spell it out or just type in my name, Kurt McVeigh, and you'll find me.
Awesome. So with this podcast, we're like focusing on women in art. And one thing I'm curious, I mean, there are a lot of things I'm very curious to hear your perspective on, but I guess the place I like to start is how you see the place of women in and or as art changing over time and across different media.
Yeah. Well, I do think it's interesting how many women, for one reason or another, as writers or artists, we're using aliases, monikers, pen names, often sounding very much like men, and how that doesn't seem super necessary anymore. So that's just been one thing, just in nomenclature, how artists want to identify, and should things shift in the landscape, have their own conversations about how they identify or previously have identified. I'm not speaking so much about gender in terms of their general concept as a human being, but more their public persona. So I think that's been really interesting, just because I've been around long enough where I know a lot of women who were, again, trying to sort of hide, not necessarily their fault, of course, but it's been interesting for me to see which artists very happily or perhaps even boldly have stood behind their sort of femme-sounding names, and those who haven't, and those whose tune has changed in recent years. So that's one thing. I would say...
A really good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and then, one thing I'll just say right out of the gate is, although I'm you know, obviously aware of how, you know, in America, especially, our identity, is quite political and sort of means so much, you know, with people and with artists. It's all about, the quality of the content, whether that's your character or the caliber of your work. Mm-hmm. And, though I do think that, you know, when I really started, which was like meaning contributing to professional publications probably in like 2012. So a little over a decade now, you know, it seemed a little bit more clear then that there needed to be a concerted effort to really jumpstart the representation conversation. You know, people, including myself here, perhaps, sort of required to say, hey, oh, you know, there's a lot more work to be done. Well, what I could say is in the time since I've started, a tremendous amount of work has been done. But even then, I'm looking for great artists. And if you're doing something fantastic, if you yourself are an interesting human being, and discriminate, I'd only based on what's interesting, important to me. Is somebody doing something truly new, novel, and really exciting? I'm there for it. So we can be multidimensional in terms of how we're viewing things. But I've always been like, who's coming with that hot fire? And either you're coming with the hot fire or you're not. And that's just me. That's just my filter. That's just my prism.
So on that topic,
answer your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. On that topic, who do you see right now is coming with that hot fire? Who are you looking at? Who are you excited about?
Break.
Oopsies. I think we're breaking up a little. Okay, awesome. So on that topic, what artists are you really excited about right now? Who do you see coming in hot and big?
Ooh, who do I see coming in hot and big?
I don't know who that is.
Well, now that you put it that way, this changes things. I like this young Chinese painter, Jun Yi Liu. She is kind of into figurative stuff, and she's trying to, she's already sort of hot in terms of her work being kind of spicy and getting a little attention. She also gets some attention as a performance artist, and I've, you know, curated or produced a couple things she's done. Recently a solo thing at this guy, Key Smith Gallery on the Lower East Side. He's got like a little energy down there on the Lower East Side. But Jun Yi, yeah, she's working on a new big series. She was sort of a little caught up in sort of like art school figuration, you know, whose stuff is more sort of photorealistic, you know, which could be kind of a trap. And her work was selling, but I think she has a lot more to offer. So she's working on a big new series. Just one piece in particular is sort of a case study, and it's pretty awesome. So Jun Yi, go find her. I think it's like Jun Yi Liu Art or something. I just did a piece on Alex Gray and Allison Gray, who's his wife and partner. They're sort of these like trippy visionary artists who live in upstate New York. They have a place down in Brooklyn too, but they have this incredible sort of like community center in Wappinger in upstate New York. Do you know them, Leah?
Yeah, I think I've seen them. Yes, I have seen their stuff. That's cool.
So I was very familiar with this guy, Alex Gray, largely through his work with this band Tool, who you probably know. But I didn't really know a lot about Allison Gray. Saw a little bit of her work. A friend of mine had a puzzle, you know, an actual analog puzzle featuring one of her works, a very sort of geometric, very complicated image broken down into a bunch of puzzle pieces. It was almost impossible to complete. So much so that when I actually saw her work in person, was kind of having a anxiety attack throwback. I kind of put it together. I was like, oh, you did that puzzle. This is why this is all happening. But I became considerably more interested in Alison Gray's work once I saw it in person. And I was able to kind of see her actual painterly hand, especially. And not only that, how she seems to really be the one kind of running the ship. And of course, you know, Alex Gray does a tremendous amount in a million ways, I'm sure. But when it came to really running, you know, this chapel for Sacred Mirrors and the sort of larger operation, I say that in the most sort of gentle artistic way possible, it seemed to be Alison who, since high school, has been kind of throwing parties and hosting events, which seems to be a big part of her overall, like, métier. So hosting this incredible, or hosting events and various workshops, classes, all sorts of things up at this place seems to be an extension of this particular skill set she has of hosting, going back many years now, going back, like, you know, 60 years or something like that, maybe 50 years or something. So I really like Alison Gray. Check her out. She kind of won me over, not as a person, she already did that, but as a painter, not just an artist, but as a painter. That's two. One more?
Sure, please.
You know, this woman just popped up in my head who's a lot of fun, and you should do something with her, actually, because she has all this space and she's looking for young women especially to do stuff. This woman, Jennifer Elster, who's a bit of like a New York performance art throwback a little, although she would probably protest and say, I'm doing stuff right now, how dare you call me a throwback. But I like her earnestness. She's very punk rock. I know that's like lost a lot of oomph, this term punk rock. It gets thrown around like anything these days. But I like Jennifer Elster. Check her out. She has a gallery called the Development Gallery, and her stuff is very, you know, not coming out of Yale MFA or anything like that. In fact, it's like the opposite. It's like some real downtown New York stuff, and I like her for that. That's good for now. I don't know. I could keep going.
Right. I mean, gosh, if you could keep, I don't know. Those are great. Those are very exciting people to check out. Thank you. I guess, let me
do some interviewing, because listen, part of this is I need to know some things. And I listened to a few of your prior podcasts, uh-huh, and I didn't get the stuff I want to know. Let me put the shoe on the other foot for a moment.
Great. Go for it.
All right. So, like, you know, I listened to Emerald Gruen and all this kind of stuff. And obviously, you know, I admire you as an artist in a bunch of different mediums and formats and stuff, modalities or whatever. But you haven't really, it seems from what I saw in this podcast, really spoken about being a new mom. You know, you spoke to Emerald. I saw it in the caption, but, you know, you didn't really get into that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm curious. If you are willing to tell us a little bit about like what your day to day is, or what your feelings were, even, you know, when you first found out you were pregnant, halfway through the pregnancy itself, that day, how do you feel right now? How has this influenced your art making, or how are you now looking back at everything you've done, perhaps in a new way or a different way? So give us like a real, like, let us know really what's popping, because you've been,
okay,
and that's fine. And sure, at your comfortability level, of course.
Of course. Thank you. Very good question. So I'm actually pregnant again.
Is this an exclusive on my podcast?
Exactly. I don't even think I've shared this actually out loud. So yeah.
That's why I'm good at what I do.
That's right. So I'm actually, yeah. Thank you. I'm entering my third trimester, so I'm getting there. It's a really good question. I took a break from creating work, basically because I was creating work that felt similar to what I had been creating before, and that started to feel redundant and boring. So I created some work that was sort of in the style of using images of myself and layering them with various found images, essentially. And I just got kind of bored of that. So I took a big break, 6 months probably, which is a very big break for me. And when I came back, I actually started back in with AI programs. So with Stable Diffusion primarily. And that became for me the way to really jump back into creating work and into work that's exciting. So I actually am now kind of thinking about my practice as very Photoshop and performative based prior to having kids. And then afterwards, well, I mean, it's only really been a year and a half so far, but afterwards, much more based in AI. So my newest series is called Mom Life, and it's these AI-based images that are based on my own image. So it has that in common, but it's using AI and then manipulating them. So that's been like a new partner for me. The AI program is really fun. In terms of like actual life, it's like I would say the time is just a lot more limited. So I feel like I just have to be a lot more focused when I am creating and when I am working. And then there's like all this time that I used to have, that I used to be able to dabble and go to openings and scroll or whatever, that I now no longer have. I would say that's a big thing. I mean, I'm not probably even really getting to the heart of it in a way. I mean, it's also very, but I'm not sure how to say anything without being really cheesy, but like, you know, having a baby is really cool. It's a very different thing. And it's funny because already the baby feels like he's kind of bigger. And so I'm having another baby. So it's a very sweet thing. And I don't know, I think it'll be a while before I end up really being able to express or probably even fully put in my work what that really feels like, what that really is. Right now, the works I'm doing are kind of based on just being a mom, multitasking, pumping milk, trying to still look somewhat presentable, going art, like, so the prompts are very much involved with, or it has all those words in it. So it's more about kind of the multitasking nature of being a mom. So I'm still pretty early in it, I would say. And I don't know fully how it'll go. It has given me a lot of distance from my earlier work for sure. And I think that maybe will be, we'll see where that goes. Like, I don't plan to really work with that content so much anymore. We'll see. But it has, maybe now that I'm a mom, people will like my earlier work more, is a hope I have.
Not to be presumptuous, and of course, being a mom doesn't mean you have to do this, but and this joke only works if you are breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. But has it changed the context of the phrase "free the nipple" for you? Like, you know, do the babies do they look you in the eye and can you sense "free the nipple"? And has this taken on a new connotation for you?
So I have a very unpopular position on free the nipple. So I breastfeed freely in public. I don't find any issue. Like, I don't have an issue flashing people in public while breastfeeding. I do still like cover up, but I know a lot of people feel more concern about other people seeing them. For me, I don't have that issue. Free the nipple for me. So I don't know if you, I'm not, I think it was before we met, but I actually wrote an article called Pay the Nipple. That was my take on free the nipple, which was that like on Instagram or on platforms, you know, that have rules, that actually what we should be doing is allowing women to be paid to show their nipple. I think personally, it's fine if Instagram wants to say no nipples, but they should be consistent and clear in their enforcement of it. Because it is a private entity, they can't have their own rules. The problem is when the rules are really vague, in my opinion. So does that answer your question? I know it's an incredibly unpopular opinion in terms of that.
Have you seen women on by the way, I'm not searching for this, but you know, it did stumble across my feed, believe me, women breastfeeding and there with their child on social media, sort of almost like public protest, now virtual, now digital, the women there saying, well, look at this, forget about being in your mall or being in your doctor's office or wherever, being at the restaurant. Now, look, now it's on your feed.
I've also seen models using fake babies to do that.
Get out.
A whole nother level.
Wow. You know, that reminds me of this guy, a French artist who's very like avant-garde. What the hell is his name? I forget, but I remember he said to me years ago, he goes, Kurt, the one performance I want to do is a real pregnant woman just smoking cigarettes in the gallery. This is my dream. I don't think he ever did it, you know, but I'd like the sentiment more than the action, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like a fake. You could do it with a fake cigarette
or a fake thing. But it just doesn't have the same oomph, you know. But obviously, I don't recommend this. Doctor, not recommended. Edgar Sarin was his name. Edgar Sarin. It was his idea. Yeah, pregnant lady smoking. Check him out. He had a Camus meets Humphrey Bogart throwback, and he didn't like social media, but he was so fascinating and he was such a cinematic guy. It was so frustrating because, you know, everything he leaned up against or everything was cinematic with him, and he'd be like, no photos, no quotes, no.
Oh, harsh.
I can't hang out with you, Edward. You're too cool and you're way too cinematic, and this no photos thing, it's just not working, you know? Anyway, I hope he's well. He's a very cool artist. A little too conceptual, though. It's hard to package him and sell him, which seems to be important.
Well, tell us more about that. How do artists package and sell themselves?
Listen, that's not for me. You are and have been probably one of the most deft users of social media in the art world that I know of. So again, I would say I'm not the person to ask about that. You are. But, you know, what I would say, though, is, you know, I would imagine your feelings about that for a bunch of reasons have shifted, too. You know what I mean? Like, what's obviously the time thing? You don't have that much time. But, you know, has posting or sharing or any of these things shifted for you, largely as it pertains to you as a physical person, you as a physical body? You know, do you miss certain things? Are you still doing things as intensely? You mentioned this 6-month window, you know, and now you're news alert going into pregnancy number two. But, you know, does that seem like a chapter closed for you in some sense? Or maybe there's a new door, a new chapter opening? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me about your relationship to social media.
Oh, it's a very, So I thought it was a closed door, but turns out it's not a closed door. I'd planned to close the door, but turns out it's not. Turns out one should never close a door, I guess. That actually,
never?
I don't know. I was planning on no new content, basically. But what I think happened is it was like, oh, well, my body is changing and it's a new body. So it's a new thing to explore and to photograph and to have a relationship with. So that has been very surprising. That was a huge surprise to me. I thought I was like retiring essentially. But I also think, you know, in terms of this question, there's art world selling, and then there's, let's say, pure commercial selling. And that's always something. Is there a difference, for one, I think is a question.
Art versus content or whatever, right?
Yeah.
What's art with content?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what's art and what's pornography? You know, mm-hmm. like these become these different questions. Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, a lot of big Hollywood people have been talking a lot about the algorithm. You know, Netflix and these huge streaming platforms going, hey, there's an algorithm and, you know, we're creating content based on the algorithm.
Yep.
You know, I felt that way about the art world since at least 2018, is that you have these market experts, you have people at institutions, you know, by institutions, I mean all these compounding, consolidating institutions, which are essentially... that's what comprises the art world, or what is the art world, which is a network of institutions sort of working together. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not so good. Sometimes it's a mix. Mm-hmm. But this sort of notion that, hey, you know, there's a way to do things. You know, every other day there's a guy, a woman coming out with a book like, this is how you do it. You know, and it's like, do what? You know, game the system. Create work that will succeed within a larger complex or matrix. I mean, if that's really the number one thing for you, like I probably won't look twice at you. I probably won't even look once at you. But again, who cares? You know, like that doesn't necessarily mean you're not on the road to success by some metric, by, you know, maybe followers, eyeballs, maybe even money. You know, if that's the goal, then, you know, figure out how the complex works and game it to death. Go ahead. You know, yeah. And there's enough people saying, this is how you do that. You know, and again, they're just sort of reifying and feeding back into that particular matrix, if you will, you know, and sometimes that stuff really serves us, you know, the museum institutions, the publications, the universities, the blue chip galleries, whatever, you know, and they're all working together, covering each other, emailing each other, you know, hey, I got this show coming up. You do this show and write about this thing, and we'll get this writer and this PR person to do this thing. And then we'll, you know, feed off this university and plug in this person. So, all right. Okay. But, that ain't really it for me. And now we're seeing this conversation again in movies. And this cycle is repeated many times, you know, not to lean on this notion of the matrix. And I'm certainly not quoting any like internet bros, you know, when I use that term. But, you know, this notion of like over the years, the Hollywood studio system in like the mid to late 60s got bloated and, you know, got all swelled up. And then this cool like late 60s, early 70s indie movie thing kind of took over. That went for a while. Got kind of blown up in commercial in the 80s, swelled up to a point, and then boom, late 80s, early 90s, you've got Tarantino and Soderbergh and all those guys. The list goes on. You know, Kevin Smith, even to a degree, or a few other people, Linklater or whatever, maybe a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So this happens in the art world too. The difference is it's small. By yeah. comparison, it doesn't necessarily, you know, the art world is around the globe. And certainly, you know, I had some friends staying with me who currently live in Greece. And they're like, you know, the art world's coming to Greece, Kurt. You know, there's a Gagosian there. To me, it's like saying they opened up an Apple store in Greece. It's like, oh, and, you know, let's be clear. People line up around the block to get Apple products. But does that mean I'm excited? Does that mean that they're bringing something new to the table? Maybe. You know, is it truly organically new and exciting, or is it just like another lens on the thing? You know, so anyway, yeah, what's art versus content? Usually when it gets to bloated content, that's the best time for something new and exciting to emerge. And trust that I am hungrily looking out for that. I'm not seeing it. I think we're in a bit of like a 90s lull. It's sort of reverse with movies and art. It's like when movies are lame, art is crushing. You know, when movies are like kind of getting excited, art slides into some sort of like kind of purgatory. I think we're kind of in that right now. It's a little boring where the exciting things have crested and gone mainstream and we haven't really discovered what's next.
Yeah. Okay. Too bad. Cause that's what I was going to ask is like, okay, so where is it exciting? Because like, I'm dying for that too. It's just like, it does feel dull right now.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, like, I think for somebody like me, who's developed a bunch of different skill sets as it pertains to the art world, right? Which is, again, a series of entities or structures in a small microcosm, generally, as it compares to the larger world. This doesn't mean art isn't everywhere, but the sort of construct that we're speaking to when we talk about the art world is really just sort of constantly self-generating, sort of self-affirming, sort of reifying itself. It introduces new novelty when need be to sort of fuel that machine further. But I think for me, if I can speak for myself, and again, the art world has served me in a lot of different ways. You know, I love this notion that I could walk into the Met, you know, I show my New York ID, I could walk into the Met and that's a safe space for the most part for me, or, you know, certain galleries or whatever have been good to me. So I don't want to like make it seem like I'm all curmudgeon-y. I'm certainly not like get off my lawn. If you come on my lawn and do something exciting, you know, what do you want? I'll bring out some lemonade and some Rice Krispie treats, you know, like I want to see it. But I think for me, all the skill sets, lessons, whatever wisdom that I've accrued in the art world, to me seems really exciting to bring that out into the world. The world seems much more exciting to me. This doesn't mean abandoning art, art making, and everything art can do. But I think there's a responsibility in looking at the world, not the insular art world, but taking not only those skill sets, but the art that it's there to serve out into the world, instead of constantly sort of patting each other on the back and reifying each other. And it's usually just the same industrial complex looking to, again, like, you know, conveniently put new skin on so it can keep doing the same shit, you know? And also that's a problem with the world too, but it just seems like the world's in desperate need of inspiration and creativity and empathy in a way that the art world uses a lot of those terms, but I'm not really sure it's in it. And then I know I've been doing it for long enough where, again, you know, to a large degree, art is decoration and ornamentation to a large degree. And I think it has these fits and stops and spurts of real energy, real sort of, you know, revolutionary energy. And, you know, I support that when that happens, you know, but in these moments where it sort of subsides to some degree, you know, I think if you have that sort of energy, if you have that spirit, there's a responsibility to take it out into the world and make change in that way. So that's kind of more interesting to me.
That's cool. And that reminds me, I mean, that makes me think of the internet as a platform, right? As a space where you can more easily access not just a New York art going audience. It also makes me think of, I mean, I guess this was back in about 10, 12, 13 years ago, but social practice art as an idea being like putting art in real communities with real people, again, and not in the gallery space. Like that was much more a thing then, and it's very much dissipated or changed into something else.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, this term outsider artist in the way we were maybe at the very beginning talking about how people identify or don't identify. You know, a big part of the conversation with Alex and Allison Gray was like, what does it mean to be a visionary artist? And how do visionary artists get sort of ghettoed, ghettoized in relationship to the contemporary or fine art world, right? Like, why is that over there and this is over here? You know, and this is kind of, you know, even what I say.
What was the answer? That's a good question.
Well, again, I think there's a fear of introducing something that doesn't conform to a particular vibe and aesthetic, because you don't want anything too radical to come in. If it does, it has to have a sort of asterisk next to it. So what you see is sort of things that are largely an extension of, you know, like mid-century modernism and abstract expressionism. Every once in a while, you know, the figure is sort of returned. Obviously, we saw that, you know, really like popping off with, you know, the Obama portraits by Amy Sherald and Kehinde was like sort of like a beautiful peak moment in a way that I think that's been sort of taken around recently to giants at the Brooklyn Museum, where that was like, and look now.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think where we're at now is the figure sort of bleeding into the dual role of the decorative, which is, okay, now the figure, yes, is still potentially political, but we are now also joining this idea of, look, art, it just is. Art can just be. Art can also simultaneously just decorate. So I do think that's a very sort of cool, sort of positive turn. It's just not the most interesting from a writing perspective. You know, I've been seeing a lot of really nice still lifes. I've been seeing a lot of like interesting patterns as they're connected to nationalities or whatever. You know, but, you know, are you doing something that really intrigues me from a writing perspective where it doesn't need to be more informed? In fact, that's usually boring to me, where it's sort of like, oh, you desperately need somebody to explain this for you. It probably didn't succeed. But if something in a really exciting way can pose all sorts of new questions, then I'm there. But yeah, I think things very nicely have settled into a sort of, well, what do you want to do? Does it work in somebody's home? And then still, what I think some of your previous guests have recognized is museums, various institutions doing a sort of course correction in terms of who's being represented, what's being represented in their collection and their spaces. So that's going to sort of continue to play out, which it is, while simultaneously things just sort of settle into something. But for me, it's like, who's agitating? Who's saying and doing this over here? You know, it's probably a good opportunity to say this summer I'm doing something with the Shinnecock Nation out in Eastern Long Island in Southampton, the Shinnecock Native American Reservation. They don't love the word reservation necessarily. Some are more okay with it. Sometimes you hear reserve or the territory, but we're doing something exciting out there in July. There's a young gentleman who has a place on the territory called Ma's House, Jeremy, and he turned his childhood home into an art gallery and residency, and he's kind of crushing it on his own. And then there's a bunch of these men and women in this brand new state-of-the-art cannabis dispensary also on the territory that has all the space and the surrounding landscape, beautiful walls. So they want to, you know, do their thing on the territory, but they're kind of like, you know, we do want to get out there a little bit. And, you know, these are people who have their own intersectional identities. Some also identify as Black or Latino, et cetera. And they want to kind of get out into the world a little bit. So what's been interesting is having sort of an objective conversation without stepping on anyone's toes about how you can take traditional crafts or, you know, whether it's, you know, wampum jewelry making or making these incredible medallions that identify tribal distinction, how you can kind of take these different things and these different elements and sort of take them into a fine art space or a contemporary space. So for me, that's really where I get excited. You know, you might have, you know, Jeffrey Gibson, I believe, who just represented the U.S. You know, nobody needs to tell Jeffrey how to do that. But a guy like Jeffrey could help people on these various reservations around the country do that. Or somebody like me serve as a bridge to somebody like that. So stuff like that is really what excites me. Like there's this one woman, Nadonis, who makes these medallions and talking about how she can sort of expand that and grow that, or just giving people the opportunity to know that they could do this or they can take this particular path. So finding out where that sort of work needs to be done and potentially being somebody who, again, comes in like, I'm going to come in 100% who I am, but I'm also going to come in 100% respectful. And if you want to get down, let's get down. If you don't, it's all good. You know, so when you're invited in like that, it's a real honor. And that's really the kind of stuff that excites me, you know, because they want to prove themselves, not just to the folks on the territory, but to a wider audience, you know, and they're seeing people like Jeffrey Gibson representing the United States, and they're like, hey, you know, I'm doing cool stuff too. I'd like to get out there a little bit more. Yeah. So
that sounds incredible. Wow. That's really exciting.
Yeah. Keep an eye out. July 13th. We're doing something out there. Check it out.
That is awesome. That sounds very, very cool. Okay. So there was kind of a question that I really wanted to ask you, because this is, I don't know, perfect Kurt question from back a little earlier. What reminded me of it was, you know, talking about that there is a bit more figurative, or seeing some more bodies. And I would say what I've been noticing is just a lot of basically grotesque bodies overall. So let's say, I'll just say grotesque. So we see a lot of that, and that definitely seems to be a trend. Something I am just very curious about is if there is a space for, let's say, hetero sexy bodies in art. Is there a space?
Well, I am the person to ask, because I have one of those. And thank you for noticing. I'm holding it together too over here, Leah. I'm holding it together. Well, one thing I would say, and I'm just going to put out a little bat signal here. I don't know if he'll hear it, but there used to be this guy who was a tattoo artist, Paul Booth, who had like Last Rites Gallery, this incredible venue that I think shut down over COVID. It was so sad because it was like three floors, maybe more. The main floor was a cool contemporary art gallery. The upstairs was like a lounge, and his like cinematic, like dark, mysterious office where he would like entertain little like VIP guests and stuff and hold court. And then downstairs were all his tattoo booths or whatever stations. But it was a safe place for artists, sometimes representational or figurative artists, doing work that was a little darker. You know, stuff you might see in like the metal world or, whatever, a little bit more, illustration focused, but it had a hard edge. So it could still survive in the contemporary realm, but you could push it, you could go darker. And, you know, of course, the fear remains, like, if you do some, you know, demon ripping out of somebody's chest or something like that, that could be amazing. It could be rendered beautifully. There's always going to be that person who goes, who's going to want this in their living room or whatever. It's going to take Guillermo del Toro or, you know, somebody, you know, Nicolas Cage in 1998, or, you know, to procure that piece or be able to live with that piece, you know. But I do think that maybe what we're seeing in terms of the grotesque, and to be an annoying art person, I think of Goya or Egon Schiele or even Blake, or, you know, there's so many different, there's this one guy I like out there. He's German, Laus Togaard. And he and I have gone back and forth a little bit because he, I think, is pushing the envelope in ways that are super subtle, coming out of that sort of Germanic area. Where, what does it mean to render up the figure in a grotesque way? You know, are you pointing to certain dark, you know, periods in Germany's history without using certain symbols or iconography that are going to hit you over the head? Like, can Germans, through the physical body, express some of their own trauma, perhaps some of the trauma inflicted by past generations through this sort of grotesque figure? So, you know, we're still seeing that, not to keep leaning on movies, but Zone of Interest was about, you know, hiding from the grotesque and living in a sort of faux utopia, you know, and the sort of saw it coming a mile away ending, spoiler alert, is a literal sort of wretch, which we've seen before, like in The Act of Killing, which was a cool documentary about that similar sort of subject of, like, if you're ignoring the horror, when will it catch up to you? Sometimes physically. So, but yeah, you know, Munch and Egon Schiele, and, you know, there's so many of those artists doing the grotesque stuff. I was even looking at David Lynch's work, not the film work, but David Lynch's painting, which is really good. There's a lot of kind of fun, grotesque stuff there. Who is that? Painter, also a woman, to throw it back, Rebecca, I don't know, she likes to do kind of cartoony figures. They're really hairy and kind of like gonzo. I don't know if you know her. Oh shit. Not Rebecca Goyette. That's not it. She might be a performance artist who's really cool. Her work sometimes goes there as a performer. Oh man, I can't think of this woman's name. It might also be Rebecca. Anyway, damn it. I should have made a note.
It's okay. Message it to me and I will add it.
I'll find it.
So then is there, okay. So is there also space for sexy images in art?
Well, you know, I think it really depends, you know, because, what are you doing? How are you doing it? I say yes. It's like on one hand, we're either like, it's like everything in America where it swings to the poles and lives there for eternity while people in the middle go, oh, Jesus, you know. And by the way, with art, you know, we don't want it to be boring and vanilla right down the middle either, right? Like, I'm not saying like, because the majority of the country lives there, our art should be representative of this. But I do think that sometimes if you push it too far to the poles, you're trying too hard. You know, it's like, what is that little, you know, sweet spot or sort of happy place? Yeah. You know, the question becomes is like, number one, do men even feel, let's say heteronormative cisgendered men, do they even feel licensed to render up the female form in a way that suggests attraction, or sort of heteronormative attraction, if you will, or the male gaze? You know, this is an extremely potent and powerful energy and mode, one that drives and has driven life itself for millions of years. Mm-hmm. And culture shows up a blip on the map, and perhaps rightfully so, and says, enough of that. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think when you don't see that in the sort of like above board fine art or contemporary art world, you're doing a disservice to number one, female sexuality. And again, I say that as anybody who represents as female, even allowing me to render up perhaps what I find attractive, like I could do that. And then simultaneously that would open me up to conversations about what's not being represented. Right. So then what? I'm put into a position to render up things that actually don't do it for me out of some sort of externalized obligation. Or something like that. So number one, are we even creating a space where number one, can men do this? Number two, are women interested in doing this? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the sexualized body, the majority of it is coming through a queer lens or prism now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of artists doing that and doing a pretty good job at doing that. I think there's probably a bit of a hesitancy to render up the so-called gay or queer body in a grotesque form. You know what I mean? Like there's still sort of like careful treading going on there, but I would imagine there's probably exception to that, you know? So, yeah. But there should be space to do whatever the hell you want. And that's why I think what we're starting to see is a bit of valid pushback on the institutional construct that says your work has to look like this. I remember Jerry posted something that looked like every other painting you've ever seen, like composed nice enough, but kind of like sloppy, unskilled, like party, pretentious shit. And I said, you know, Jerry, this looks like everything else, you know, trying to say you're allowed to step out of the confines of, you know, these particular parameters. He goes, oh, you're being kind of a dick. So it's like, ooh, dare not even push that there might be an aesthetic homogeneity that the deputized must adhere to in perpetuity. Right. So I'm just a little bored of that. Like, who's breaking through that? Who's breaking it down? Please tell me. I'm interested.
Me too.
But I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah. 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 That's so well said.
Leah, real quick. Hold on. Did you see this video of Miyazaki, this famous older Japanese animator? He's made many incredible films, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, and all that. So a couple of years ago, I'm not exactly sure when, it was a couple of years ago, he gets invited into somebody's like animation studio. And it's like a bunch of young Japanese guys working on like early AI animation. And it's like that early stuff, Leah, where it's like weird humanoid bodies crawling it looks really uncanny and strange. And they show it to Miyazaki, who does these beautiful sort of traditional, like whimsical, but often quite heavy animated films. And the guy is like a god in Japan and to some degree internationally. The Boy and the Heron, his more recent film, I cried at the end. It got to me in a really surprising, subtle way. I was like, oh my God, this guy's still like an incredible genius. But anyway, there's a photo of him being shown this very grotesque 3D, I think AI animation, like back in like 2018 or 2019, when it was still super crude. And they show it to him and he looks like he's going to have like a nervous breakdown. He's like, who would make of this type of thing? You know, it's like, I think we've lost. I think this is like the Antichrist. I think, you know, we've lost faith in ourselves. And you could see these young animator guys who are just trying to push this technology forward, but bringing this grotesquery to this man looking to highlight the beauty in life, the beauty in the art of animation and creation, the human hand, what the human soul and hand can do. And these guys are like, look at these crawling 3D AI mutants. Like, what do you think? And he has this really bad reaction. And you could see these young animators like getting squashed by their hero. So I do think that that's an interesting, maybe furthering of that question to say, what does it mean when we divorce ourselves from that thing that makes us truly human? Like, what is the true grotesquery? Is it the final image, or is it giving up on who we are? Now, again, we all work with machines. I'm on my laptop and we're using Zoom, we're using technology. The machine isn't inherently bad. You know, everything is a machine to some degree, or a tool. You know what I mean? So the question is like, again, probably context and intention. And then, yeah, we can all have a conversation about what's beautiful to us. Mm-hmm. You know, those creepy crawling weirdo things like seemed like the end of life as we know it for Miyazaki. But for those guys, they're like, hey, this is just a step towards something really interesting. You know, they were saying it could be zombies in a video game. And he's like, oh, it's still terrible, you know? So anyway, sorry for doing my bad Miyazaki, but go watch that video. So yeah, the PE is in the, or grotesque is in the eye of the beholder, I assume, you know?
Totally. Yes. And there's just like that the more different kinds of presentations, the better. So yeah, that I think, you said it all so well. That like, yeah, I feel, I don't know. I hope it's expanding. I hope that the action.
Let me ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
You know, like maybe like a lot of men giving birth to me sounds like, you know, a beautiful thing. But I mean, it's like no joke, right, Leah? And obviously you don't have to go into like, but, you know, I'm thinking like all the amniotic fluid and the placenta and the pain and like, something so beautiful, I wouldn't put a word like grotesque, but, you know, body horror elements or components. Was there anything like that for you? Were like, wow, this is fucking too much, or this is
the grossest thing ever. I still haven't been able to look at the photos of it. Like I have photos of it. It's so gross. I can't even look at the photos. I did not have my ideal birth. I was induced. So it kind of brought in a whole different realm of things, but still there was a lot of pain and pushing and stuff involved. And yeah, I am not one to say, like, I went into it very positive thinking. I did the whole hypnobirthing thing. I was very like trying to be very meditative and, you know, non-medical and whatever about it, and it all went out the window. So yeah, birth is definitely, in my experience, one of the most grotesque things in the world.
And as an artist, you know, did it feel was there an artistic element? Were you able to use or feel you know, even like your emotional or intellectual skill set in terms of like this notion of creating a life? Yeah. Like, did you being an artist actually help being a mother?
Not in the birth. Not for me in my first birth. I'm hoping
you
in my second.
You weren't standing over a canvas when it was happening? That's too much.
No, no, it was, I wish. That's like, that way, how cool would that be? That's kind of an interesting
too
idea.
Much. Too much.
No, it did not, that kind of creativity. I did not get that in my first experience of birthing. I mean, yeah. And that's sort of like, you know, that's a very common phrase, right? That like the, you're creating a person, and how does that relate to creating an artwork? Does it relate?
Yeah. And also,
I have no good answer.
And also,
yeah,
you know, notions of the self, you know, you're dealing with artificial intelligence. You're for years now have been rendering up your own image in these interesting ways. What's it like to see some component of yourself reflected back at you in this sort of disembodied, you know, this separate life form, to see some reflection of yourself back in that way? Is that crazy?
Yeah, that's really sweet. I see myself a little, I feel like my baby looks a lot like my dad. Is actually, I see my dad more. They have very similar features. So that's sweet. It's interesting that once in a while there'll be things like he'll like foods that I like and not like foods I don't like. And I'll be like, oh yeah, that's like me. But that's about as far. I'm not too much like he's very much his own creature right now, I would say. And yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry, I'm not very eloquent on this topic, but it is like a really good question.
You can take it into your next podcast if you have notes.
Yeah. That's right. That's
but,
right.
No, you're giving me a lot. And obviously, you know, I also don't want to dig too deep. This is obviously your private world too, to some degree. So if you're just scraping a little off the surface, I'm happy with that too. You know?
Yeah. It's weird. It's a hard thing to talk about. It's a hard thing to put words to. It's not that it's hard to talk about, but it's hard to put words to, because there's just so many, I guess, feelings. And then it also feels in a way very simple, almost mundane, just very like, you know, it's a beautiful, cute baby running around who's really sweet. Like, I mean, I don't have, like, unlike my artwork, where I feel like there's a lot of complexity and layers and nuances and relationship of my image to my image on different screens and different like media. With a baby, it's just a baby.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, not to go off, maybe I could share this because I didn't put it in my Alex Gray piece. And I do want people to read that. Also, I want people to read our interviews
yes.
that we did all the way back in like what, like 2018? 18? Yeah. I'll have to revisit that, see if that holds up, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine it does. But yeah, you know, I just did this piece on Alex and Allison Gray, which I mentioned. And when you're a visionary artist, like a lot of artists in the sci-fi fantasy realm or comic book artists, a lot of these really seminal, foundational artists in the comic book world, again, visionary, blah, 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 blah. AI is raking through their work and rendering it up some facsimile, some simulacrum or whatever. And, you know, I asked Alex Gray this, who is like OG visionary artist, so many artists working in that particular subgenre have been inspired or continue to be inspired by him. And yes, Allison to a degree as well, but really Alex. And at the end of two separate interview sessions, like I was kind of running a little low on time, I went, hey, you know, let's talk about AI and not, you know, fair use. We got through all that, but I asked him like, you know, visionary art is largely, if you've had a psychedelic or a mystical experience or something, you're rendering up what you experienced subjectively or in your third eye space or whatever, you render that up. But I, you know, have been looking at different image generators that like, if they keep getting pushed and pushed, they start to show some sort of like archetypal geometric god-like image or something like that, where they're attempting to sort of get something or get at something that isn't so easily quantifiable or representational. And they usually kind of hit a wall in some sort of like, you know, symmetrical, geometric mandala of some kind or something like that. And who knows? But I asked Alex Gray, I said, hey, you know, do you think AI will ever be able to actually sort of achieve some sort of like visual singularity where it's able to render up things beyond, you know, our sort of immediate data set here? And, you know, will it ever be able to lay out a cartography or a topography of known and unknown realms? And, you know, I joke that this guy's like a wizard, you know, but in this moment at the end of our second interview and his wife's there and he kind of like leans in and like swells like Gandalf when he like yells at people and he's like, no, you know, when he, I don't know if you've seen those movies where he like kind of swells and sort of shows his wizardly gravitas. And, you know, Allison's like normally very like on it and assertive, but it was one of the rare moments where she just kind of like, not intimidated, but was like, go on, you know, school him. He had showed in this moment, it was both gentle and intimidating, where he sort of like leaned in like Morla the turtle in Neverending Story. And he was like, no, no, meaning this machine on Earth, even with like the most powerful quantum computing, wherever that goes, maybe as it's interfacing with the human body and all of our complexity at some point, maybe that is the singularity point that people speak to. But just this moment of him kind of checking AI and checking humans and our love of it. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be afraid of, militaristic things and all this other kind of stuff, more socio-cultural problems, but just like its ability to generally map things at some huge, massive level, Alex Gray felt it would be and will continue to be falling short for a very long time. So anyway, I thought you'd
be interested. That makes sense. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, there is something to the human element. And even with AI, you know, how it's run, I mean, it's part of my art practice, but I feel like I like it most when it's also part of me, where it's been coming out of my image. Like, I don't know how I would deal with it without it coming out of my images to begin with. So like, there is also, there is this, like, there's still this human element to it. And he's saying in a way that it won't surpass, supplant.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps we're only really starting to, perhaps for the first time in a long time, reconnect with what our bodies are and our minds, our spirit, quote unquote. I'm holding up air quotes for, we're only starting to really reconnect with what these things are actually capable of, let alone these machines that we're making. Yeah. Anyway, I thought you as somebody who plays with AI might enjoy that from Alex.
Of course, it's a great story.
No,
yeah.
No, we will. It will never. No, never.
Well, anything else that you want to add? I mean, I feel like we could talk for hours, but anything else that you can think of?
No, I know you got to get back and do stuff, but what is next for you? What do you have up your sleeve? What can you share that is like your next move or your next thing?
Thank you. I am coming to New York in a couple of weeks and I am showing at the Other Art Fair.
Oh.
And which is sort of it's going to be my first time showing my own work, but I am kind of into this as a new approach or new thing for me. So I'm going to be showing at the Other Art Fair. And yeah, that's my main thing coming up. How about you? I mean, you've given us some.
I have one more thought.
Great.
And, you know, I was listening back and we kind of touched on some of this, but you sometimes ask, can women be art?
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, it makes me think, all right, well, we're talking about like, you know, a human body or the female archetype. And I think of, you know, quote unquote, God in, you know, the quote unquote Garden of Eden and Eve. But have you heard of Lilith?
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. So by the way, for anyone who finds themselves at a Shabbat dinner, don't bring up Lilith. That's very taboo. I learned that. I was like, no. Anyway, but a lot of artists have been kind of looking into Lilith, evoking Lilith in their work, where the idea is that when God made Adam, he also made simultaneously, also from the clay, right? This is me reiterating these ancient stories, right? Mm-hmm. Also made another woman, Lilith, meaning they were both simultaneously erected from the clay. And apparently Lilith was like full on equal to Adam in every way, but really kind of surpassing him in terms of her engagement with the garden. She was like, forget about Eve. She was like, you know, like Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy and Batman and Robin, you know, she was like one with the garden, one with the animals, one with the whatever, to the point where apparently Adam got kind of intimidated. He was like, yo, like, I thought I was supposed to have a companion. And she's like, you know, becoming one with the grass and the trees and the snakes and the flowers, you know, what about me? Mm-hmm. And God went, oh, you know, you're right. This was supposed to be like a companion. And he like erases or raises Lilith to the ground, you know, delete, and then plucks the rib and then makes Eve. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, I was just thinking like, you know, can women be art? This question you asked some of your previous guests. Yep. Just thinking all the way back to like this, you know, archetypal old Testament Genesis story that gets, even the story itself gets relegated to, you know, the B-sides, the rejected stories, you know, the side stories over there with, you know, some Kabbalistic narratives and things that get thrown to the side. So, you know, even Lilith, as this the OG creation, the OG woman from God, was a failed pilot episode, depending on who's telling the story or who's writing history. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyway, I thought a lot of women artists now evoking Lilith in a sort of full circle way, which is not only can women be art, but mm-hmm. who decides what art is, let alone mm-hmm. can women be art? You know, mm-hmm. this is a story going back literally like to the Garden of Eden, if that's something that we're dealing with metaphorically, which we are. And let me just say, for people who can't see the forest for the trees, which is everybody, like, we need to understand that artists, especially dealing with religious themes, are dealing with largely imagery as metaphor. You know, like, I remember recently this Easter, how many like zombie Jesus like jokes are made, and I get it. You know, I'm not without humor. It's like, yeah. But it's like, that's not really what that's about. And I'm not turning this into a seminary, but what I'm just saying is it's time for us to start looking deeper, where not only are the original sort of narratives unreliable, but even the criticisms mm-hmm. are the ones that we're familiar with, the ones that new generations are dealing with. Those are unreliable too. They're stale. So whatever dogma you're either peddling or trying to unpack, as I leave you here, what I would say is it's probably just a good idea to take a huge step back from both of those things and start thinking for yourself. You know, it's a good time, especially for Americans.
Yes, perfect. Love it. That's the perfect line to end on. Thank you so much, Kurt. Such a pleasure to have you and to talk with you.
Likewise. Give that baby a big old kiss.
Okay.
All right. Say Uncle Kurt says hello. Don't worry, you'll meet him later.
Great.
All right, I'll see you.
Love it. Yeah. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
See you.
This has been the Women as an Art podcast, hosted by me, Leah Schrager. Please visit womenasanart.com for more information and to find us on socials. Thanks.